agency when the local agency gets it. So, it's not worrying me, I guess, as much as my first fear.
Further discussion of the bill as amended? Linda?
I just want to ask for clarification on one point. Under Section 4, is it correct that the dentist or doctor or whoever will turn this information over either to the police agency or to an individual who has reported the person missing and has the form and goes directly to the doctor or dentist? Then is there an expectation requirement that they fill that information in on that form and give it back to that person?
I think the intent of that section was to leave it open so that the police agency would have the option of requesting that be done by the reporting parent or guardian, or the police agency could take direct action themselves if they felt circumstances justified. Otherwise, they could request the reporting person to get the information and bring it in.
Thank you.
One other question before we, in section, one other issue that Linda raised, in section, subsection 2 of section 5, the issue of sealing versus destroying information relating to a missing person who is discovered to be living. Can you comment on that for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. From the standpoint of the automated systems, which is my concern with this bill, it makes no difference to the local agencies who have the paper files and the information. It may make a difference. Once they cancel the records from the computer system, it's gone. It's no more concern to us. But they will have collected probably paper information at the local police station or sheriff's office. And I don't know, the definition of sealing or destruction is sometimes a little hazy. I don't have any particular hang up one way or the other as to which is done. As far as us from a system standpoint, the local police agencies may have.
Sheriff, are you still here? You have a comment on that issue?
I need you to come down there.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I didn't catch the question I was talking to.
Take a look at section. You have the amendments there?
Yeah.
Section 5, subsection 2.
Sealing or destroying doesn't make any difference in your agency.
Well, I think unless it would supersede the public records law, we would have to maintain that record for whatever period of time the public records law requires us to do it. Sealing a record and maintaining it is quite a chore. I think we'd prefer to destroy the record if that's allowable. Actually, it would be under the law. Mr. Chairman, I think currently police reports have to be retained about 7 years. And maybe this law would supersede the public records law, but that does concern me. Because if the volume is what I anticipate on this, you may have quite a volume of sealed records because most missing people turn up within a week or so. And if you've gone through that process within, if it is 48 hours, I have not looked at this bill carefully, that would be a real problem.
In your view, then, it would be workable and more preferable policy to mandate a destruction policy?
Of all of the additional records, yes.
Mr. Chairman, for clarification, this is only referring to those medical facts that you've, or medical information that's been obtained, dentist information, medical facts, so forth, not the total case. Is that what you're referring to?
My question is, are your comments, Sheriff, with respect to such information from medical practitioners, are you suggesting that those would be more appropriately destroyed than sealed by the local law enforcement agents?
My gut reaction would be that they should be destroyed. I have not had time to think that one through.
Last question.
Ms. Cabrera.
What are you doing right now when you have, Sheriff, when you have this information you've gathered on a missing person and they show up?
That would remain with the case file, and that would be retained as required by the public records law. I believe the term is somewhere around 7 years, and then in the meantime, it gets microfilmed and becomes part of a case file. It's in our archive in our department, which is a rather large department, and eventually it can be purged according to public records law.
Well, I mean, if we made you keep it for 7 years now, you wouldn't be doing anything. You wouldn't be making you do anything you weren't already doing now, would we? Or is there a...
No, it's just the volume that concerns me. I just perceive, without really discussing this with my colleagues, that you're going to be asking us to do a substantial amount of work that we're not currently doing. And all I to reiterate my first comment, we're laying people off right and left.
One more question. Are the elected dentists, are they sending you their original x-rays, or are they sending you copies?
Well, currently, we're not even obtaining them unless there is a reason to suspect foul play, and that doesn't occur too often. I would doubt they would give us our originals, their original.
So you wouldn't need to return them to them, is what I'm thinking.
Well, it gets very complex. If you're going to ask for x-rays, then you're going to have to... I don't even know if you can copy the x-rays.
Mr. Chairman, if I might... In my dealings with the FBI on their intentions with this file, the missing persons file, what would probably occur is a form would go out to a dentist in which he would chart in certain information, which can be converted to computer code and entered into the system. Probably would not be asking anybody to provide x-rays until such time as there was a possible location of a person. You would have information that says, yes, this physician repaired an ankle for Shirley Davidson and has x-rays or doesn't have x-rays. But as far as providing actual x-rays to the police department, I don't think there's any intent of that at this point, and wouldn't be until such time as you had further investigation, because hopefully the majority of people are going to turn up and in a short time, probably before these processes ever get underway in most cases.
One last question. Do you have any reaction to this issue of sealing versus destroying?
My only reaction is we should make it probably as easy as possible for the local agencies to handle it. I think all they're really going to have in their file is a form that may have some dental charts on it and another form that maybe lists some surgical scars and that type of thing. It's not going to be actual doctors or dentist records. I feel quite sure of that. I have not seen the final forms that are coming out from the federal. If they're usable, we would probably suggest that the state of Oregon adopt those in total, because they have to fit into that computer system, so the information has to be compatible.
In relation to this issue, sealing versus destroying, where do those comments of yours... Where do those lead you as to a conclusion on which is the preferable approach at this initial agency level? Or do you have a reaction?
I really don't have a reaction. As far as the computer systems, once they cancel it, it's gone. But that's really an issue for the local police agencies to decide. Sealing is a normal thing to do. There are other provisions for sealing records. Destruction, we... do have certain requirements for destruction of particular types of material, criminal history information, for instance. And on that, we specify shredding or burning. Everybody may not have that capability, so I'm a little reluctant to come down very hard one way or the other.
My suggestion is we leave it the way it is. If that's something you could further explore, Sheriff, if the bill does clear the House,
yes, I'll be
in a position to deal with that in the parallel committee consideration. Further discussion of the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, I move that the floor of the House do pass recommendation as amended.
So Courtney moves House Bill 2492 as amended to the floor of the do pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Courtney?
Yes.
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
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 2369, Mr. Gruber, have you had an opportunity to review those amendments for?
I have, yes.
That's true.
Chairman, by following the committee's intent on this, I think that can be accomplished on the dash two amendments to 2369 by, in line 15, deleting out the words "or persons," and in line 16, after the comma, after the first comma, inserting the phrase "or against more than one person for the same crime or crimes," comma.
Linda, do you have any comment?
Mr. Chairman, what was that second change?
I want to review those one more time here.
In line 15, deleting the words "or persons," and in line 16, after the first comma, inserting the words "or against more than one person for the same crime or crimes."
Okay, the chair so moves. Do you review those with Mr. Barton?
Yes, sir.
Barton.
Robert Barton, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Justice. Mr. Chairman, I did discuss those with Mr. Gruber. He and I discussed one aspect of it, and I'm not sure. I believe I was here for the last hearing on February 11th, but not for the portion in which this amendment was entertained. And it does, as amended, or as the proposed amendment would read, would leave kind of a paradoxical situation in that if a defendant himself, acting alone, engaged in separate crimes, in other words, that act, same act or transaction language would apply to an individual defendant who, let's say, stole a car and committed several burglaries, assuming that would be considered the same transaction or criminal episode as the courts look on that language, then he could be, all those charges could be lumped together in a joint indictment and he could be tried in one single trial for those crimes. However, if you had a situation in which a defendant in concert with another defendant engaged in a crime spree, and let's say one of them committed the car theft, after which they both committed a series of burglaries, or they committed a burglary and one committed an arson and one committed a theft, the way that I would read this, they would not be able to be indicted together, much less tried together. I don't know if that was the intent of the committee.
No, we're not reaching indictments, only trials.
But the section here, 132.560, is the indictment section.
Right.
And I think these amendments would cut back, as it reads now, defendants who are engaged in the same act or transaction. That language on line 15, I think, is the key to the whole change here, where it says person or persons. By deleting "or persons," we're really reducing the situation to one in which only a defendant acting alone who engages in an act or transaction where he commits several crimes. So I would make the suggestion that perhaps that deletion not take place. In other words, that line 15 remain as it is set forth, when there are several charges against any person or persons for the same act or transaction, or against more than one person for the same crime or crimes. In other words, incorporating that change that Mr. Gruber's indicated, but leaving in the language "or persons." And that way, if you do have a situation where two defendants are engaged in a crime spree and one commits a slightly different offense than the other, they may be jointly indicted and jointly tried in the court's discretion.
I think that's the way it is currently. I think that would make the new language just an included situation in all the already indicted as the "or person."
Yeah. The subcommittee's intention, I believe, was to accept a change in the starting situation as to what is the normal and what is the exceptional situation as far as joint trials, but to confine that to a common charge in the strictest sense, the same crime or crimes. So it's, to some extent, there would be a broader charging flexibility so far as 132.560, but the availability of a joint trial as the norm would be confined, as I recall the subcommittee's action, would be confined to a exact commonality of the charges.
I don't have a great deal of practical experience with joint indictments, from my experience before I came to the legislature. But what my understanding is, the only purpose for jointly indicting defendants is that you're aiming for a joint trial. Otherwise, there's no purpose to be served in jointly indicting. So it's kind of a decision that go onto that track at the indictment stage, and that's why I addressed the language in the indicting section here. If you've got two people who are jointly indicted and you're going down the track, at what triggers the decision then to separate? Is it a defendant's motion maybe to sever, and he has the burden of proving that he's being prejudiced? It might take more language than this, and certainly a little bit more pondering than I've had an opportunity to do for it.
Mr. Chair, another question.
Mr. Guerrero?
Not exactly on the same point. My question is this, on your proposed amendments to the proposed amendment. If we say for or against more than one person for the same crime or crimes, and we don't say arising out of the same transaction, we have a problem here with two different robbers accused of committing robbery one being jointly indicted, even though they allegedly did the acts on different dates.
What?
You see what I'm saying? That do we need in there where we cross out the or persons for the same? We just say person for the same act of transaction, and we say or against more than one person for the same crime or crime, and to clarify, we say arising out of the same act or transaction. I mean, that's being so obvious.
Okay, I understood the words crime or crime, the word crime in this context to be the same crime in which you're engaging in concert with one another, rather than the same statutory offense.
Would we, I don't know, would we ever get to have a judge say, gee, it's the same crime, you know, robbery's robbery?
Gosh, I wouldn't try to guess what a judge
would say. Okay.
Well, I think, Representative Scrivere, you brought up a good point, though, because that is a little bit ambiguous as to crime meaning the offense or crime meaning the robbery that took place March 11th, 1983 at Safeway store. And I was trying to think ahead as they were doing that, and if you put in or against more than one person with the same act or transaction, I think the whole phrase becomes redundant with the first clause there, where there are several charges against any person for the same act or transaction. I guess that goes back to what I was saying. If you left in or persons, you would arrive at the same result.
You and I are saying the same thing in a different
way. I think we're on the flip side of
it. We'll set it over. House Bill 2266.
The other bill that I had mentioned to you where I felt like we were going to need to work through these amendments maybe in that there might be some remaining difficulties with these amendments as well. Legislative Council and I discussed it briefly for the full committee. This bill originated from the Department of Justice for the Oregon District Attorneys Association and began as a provision that a guilty plea to one charge would not bar a prosecution for another charge that arose out of the same act or transaction. And we had some amendments that were offered by Mr. McDonald and that were further discussed, and some proposed amendments were submitted in response to concerns raised by Mr. Hennings, and those were aimed at limiting the bar to a related prosecution so that if the additional charges came out of the same episode and was filed within 30 days from the time the guilty plea was entered, that the person would have an opportunity to withdraw their guilty plea and everything that was associated with making that guilty plea. And the district attorney could proceed with the subsequent prosecution. We have some amendments that I can pass out to the committee and discuss, but I would ask also that Mr. Gruber, just if you want to do that, that he discuss with the committee some things that he was considering in drafting these amendments.
Before I judge whether we need to set it over, let's pass them out and see.
One of the items that came up when Legislative Council was drafting the amendments that we had never really, I hadn't thought about and hadn't been brought up before the committee, is where I think we were all thinking that the first charge comes up, the person enters a guilty plea. 2 weeks later, the district attorney files another charge against them. Then what happens to it, involving the same act or transaction, and the notion is, well, that they wouldn't have entered their guilty plea if they knew they were going to then subsequently be prosecuted for something else in the same act or transaction. One of the things that came up, Mr. Gruber noted, was there may be a case where the first action might have been filed before the second one in which the person enters a guilty plea. And that was just something that I hadn't thought about, and I don't think that we'd ever discussed. I don't know if any other committee members have thought about that, but that's one of the things that is worked into these amendments.
Okay, I guess we better set it over. Anything further to come before the full committee?
Chairman, notice of minority report for 2262. Subpoena power.
Okay.
You going to expand it? Broaden it to include district attorneys?
The import of it would be to allow the attorney general to convene a grand jury.
I'd join Representative Hill.
Well, the only concern I would raise certainly is that it's a matter of, was that a concept which the committee had the opportunity to discuss? I don't remember that was proposed. This only goes to the procedure of advancing in minority reports options which the committee didn't really consider, or the subcommittee. I'm not questioning its validity.
I understand.
The point is, it may be a matter that the subcommittee might or might not have considered favorably. That's my only point.
Well, I guess it maybe is too much assumed. Mr. Chairman, right now, the testimony was fairly clear that the Attorney General has to, with the cooperation of a district attorney, can convene a grand jury now. And I guess the option was not given, at the option of the Attorney General being able to convene a grand jury on his or her own motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Courtney.
Well, I have a weak memory. Specifically, we never discussed the specific type of amendment. What we did discuss was what the DA did.
Because
we were led to believe that the AG was tracking what the DA did. Then we started to question the DA, I believe Van Dyke, who indicated the procedures that he had to go through to get this kind of power. So that we had this kind of similarity. I don't know if we ever discussed amending the bill, Mr. Chair, to require, if you will, the AG to do the same hurdles or the hooping that apparently the DA does, although we were led to believe by the DA that it was one of these, I forget what, he treated it in a very matter-of-fact sort of way, that when you go to the grand jury, it's all over their rubber stamp. But I don't, it's an interesting point you raise, Mr. Chair, because in all the committees I've served on, I have a point of information, if I might. Is it, when you get into minority reports and you're going to go with a minority report, is it a matter of courtesy, or are you obligated to have discussed the what you're trying to do with the committee and given them a shot at it? I'm just curious. I don't know. I've never.
Well, I think it's certainly a more orderly process,
right,
if what it is that is being advanced as the minority position is one that the majority has specifically considered and rejected. Otherwise, I don't know whether the committee might or might not adopt that concept. I haven't had testimony on that specific proposal. I don't know if it's sound alternative or not.
Mr. Chairman, I have to apologize. No, it is something that should have been. Perhaps I was assuming too much in the knowledge of the minds of the committee.
What was the vote? 5-3, one absent. Will not do. 5-3-1.
I mean, I have no objection to considering the concept, taking the bill back
and
considering
it.
I think, though, that is a better way to...
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, that's
clear the decks with respect to options that might be advanced as a
freshman mistake, Mr. Chairman. And obviously, I'm not trying to hide it because I bring it up now. I wasn't trying to do anything secretive.
Stick around and feel a while. You'll get your hand on it. Like the rest of us do.
I'd like to have a few minutes. I'd like to take about a 3-minute recess. Bring the bill back, take about a 3-minute recess, and I'd like to pursue the concept for a few minutes while we have the bill in front of us and we have representatives of the department here. Are you able to speak to that, Mr. Mayor? It may well be that we'd then be ready to act again, or that we'd like to set it over for a more in-depth consideration of it. I'm willing to pursue it any one of two or three different ways. Chair moves the committee reconsider the vote by which it reported House Bill 2262. Is there objection? Okay. We'll recess about 5 minutes, and then we'll take up that question. Again, with the understanding that we're not necessarily precluded to acting today on it.
Yes. Yes.
Take it as a
cut. Thank you very much.
Okay.
If you don't say you saw your bells at those.
What did you say?
Skipper, I had another signal down there. Courtney, can you keep these two in line? That's your job. You can stop focusing down here. You can pay attention over there.
I said I was going to the hills and you said it down the boat.
I want to show you. Courtney, let me take care of my frosh over here. You take care of your frosh, okay? Have a division of responsibility.
Yeah, 13 items. Your profile's in the
that? Okay, your committee will return to order. Gary.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bill Gary from the Attorney General's Office. With the suggestion that Representative Hill has made with respect to a solution to the problem that our bill, House Bill 2262, is intended to address, is one that we have considered. We don't reject it outright because it does reach the same result that we want, which is to avoid the necessity of having to ask district attorneys to convene a grand jury on our behalf in the course of an investigation. The reason that we elected subpoena power without a grand jury rather than giving us statewide grand jury power to convene a grand jury statewide is because of fiscal concerns. The district attorney's subpoena power right now is codified in ORS 136.563. That statute says that the district attorney may issue subpoenas in support of the prosecution or for such other witnesses as the grand jury directs. We read that statute to mean that the district attorney has the same power to issue subpoenas that we would have. The only difference is that his subpoenas must be issued in connection with a grand jury investigation that is ongoing. That is not a problem for the district attorney because the district attorney has a grand jury convened as a matter of course. And so the only